Welcome to the Clinical Education Initiative podcast, Conversations with CEI, where we feature conversations with clinical experts, their experience and insights on current health issues in the areas of HIV, primary care and prevention, sexual health, hepatitis C, and drug user health.
Hello, and welcome to Conversations with CEI. My name is Margie Urban. I'm an infectious disease physician at the University of Rochester, and I'm joining you today as part of the New York State Clinical Education Initiative's Sexual Health Center of Excellence. I'm here with my colleague, Dr. Daniela DeMarco.
Hi, I'm Daniela DeMarco. I'm also an infectious disease physician at the University of Rochester and working with the CEI. And we're here today to talk to you about DoxyPep. This is DoxyPep Part 2. And to start off, we'll give you a quick recap of our podcast, DoxyPep Part 1, which was released in November of 2023. So for those who are not familiar or didn't hear the first session, DoxyPep is doxycycline post-exposure prophylaxis. And that is taking 200 milligrams of doxycycline, ideally within 24 hours, but up to 72 hours after condomless sex to help prevent 3 bacterial STIs, chlamydia, syphilis, and gonorrhea. Some highlights here in the population studied, which were cisgender men and transgender women with male partners and a history of bacterial STI in the past year. Taking DoxyPep, as I described, reduced the incidence of these bacterial STIs overall by about 2/3. We also mentioned at that time there was a study that hadn't been published yet conducted among cisgender women on HIV PrEP in Kenya where there wasn't significant benefit seen. So I'm going to hand it over to Margie and we're going to hear some updates on the evidence so far.
So when we last spoke to you in November, we were thinking that perhaps the CDC guidelines would have come out. There were draft guidelines published in October in the United States that were open for public comment. That comment closed in November. But to date, there is no formal guideline yet released from the CDC. However, that Kenya study was published. So we now have 3 of 4 studies conducted on DoxyPep that have been formally published in peer-reviewed literature. The Kenya study was released in December of 2023 in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it outlined methods and procedures in the study and the findings. So just to summarize, it was a study with a similar format as those done in men who have sex with men and transgender women. It enrolled approximately 449 cisgender women who were young, ages 18 to 30, and they were all already taking oral HIV PrEP. They had a fairly high rate of baseline STIs of about 18%, although the STIs differed than those seen in the studies conducted on men who have sex with men and transgender women. Here in Kenya, most of the STIs were chlamydial infections. There were fairly low rates of syphilis infections. Gonorrhea was also lower than chlamydia and is known to be highly resistant to tetracycline in this location. They did have a high rate of incident STIs of approximately 25 per 100-person years in the doxy group and 29 per 100-person years in the standard of care group. And just to mention, this is a randomized controlled trial, so those who were entered either found themselves placed in the group to receive doxycycline as PEP or to receive standard of care, which meant testing for STIs every 3 months. And if the STI was found, then of course you would have treatment of whatever STI was found. And unfortunately, and really I think a bit surprisingly for most in the field, there was no difference seen between the two groups when the outcomes were evaluated. So we knew most of that from the oral presentations that were given at the retrovirus meetings at CROI in February of 2023, but the publication did fill in some details for us. And some of that was a reporting on detection of doxycycline levels in hair samples of a sample of 50 of the 449 participants. So those were randomly selected, and in those 50 participants, they detected doxycycline in only 29%, so a relatively low exposure of doxycycline in that randomly selected group of 50 individuals. So the first question I had when I heard that report was that there were low levels of doxycycline detected. Was this is an intermittent dosed medication that you take as needed? So it would be important to know how long doxycycline persists in the hair to know how valuable that is at measuring levels. It's not like you're measuring a level of something you take every day. And it was reported that it would be expected for doxycycline to persist for about a month. So it's assessing the use of doxycycline over the prior month. So one possibility, I guess I'll throw it back to you, Daniela, why do we think this didn't work in cisgender women to prevent STIs? Is one possibility that not enough people utilized it to really see an effect?
I think that's a possibility. I think to blame the entire lack of effect on adherence would be a leap at this point. I don't think we have enough evidence to say adherence was the primary issue in lack of an effect difference between the two groups. There are certainly still the considerations of whether there could be differences biologically. Are there different concentrations needed to be maintained for certain time periods? And maybe those differ between people assigned male and people assigned female or at different anatomic sites. I don't think we have a great understanding of that yet, but from an early pharmacologic study, we do see that you should be able to attain the right levels of doxy in the different anatomic sites, at least an in vitro assessment to prevent these STIs. The other question is whether gonorrhea resistance played a role here. And I think the gonorrhea resistance here at baseline is similar to what was seen in France, where they still saw benefit to DoxyPep. So I don't think we can blame that either. You did mention earlier they have a different prevalence of these STIs compared to what is seen in the US. And so does that play a role? Not entirely clear. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. And one of the other things we don't understand all that well is the actual STI risk differences between this group and the other studies. And so here they had fewer median partners reported on their quarterly assessments as compared to the studies in the US and France. It may be with fewer partners that there was a difference in STI risk acquisition between the groups.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty dramatic difference. So the median number of partners in the Kenya study for the cisgender women was 2, with a range of 1 to 4 or 1 to 5 in the doxy group and the standard of care group. And that differs from the other study published in the New England Journal, that so-called DoxyPep trial that took place in Seattle and San Francisco, where the median number of partners was more in the range of 7 to 10, depending on the group, and with interquartile ranges into double-digit number of partners in the prior 3 months. So that perhaps does figure into your risk of acquiring an STI in the follow-up period. I think at this point, the bottom line is there was no difference between two groups. Maybe it's as simple as adherence, or maybe it's some combination of factors that will have to be figured out through subsequent investigations. But at this point, I would say I'm not comfortable prescribing DoxyPep for cisgender women. I can't really see a justification for that personally with a trial with really no benefit seen. So you potentially have a risk of a side effect or a risk of acquiring resistance. I think that's my opinion. I don't think it's universally held, but that's where I would land right now.
Yeah. And I think that's where most of the guidelines fall as well, with the exception of the state of California, is really sticking to the recommendations of how the studies were done and where the clear benefits were shown.
Yeah. So with that, we're still using DoxyPep, although using it in those who were born male and primarily those who are having sex with other men, which is where most guidelines are recommending this. Let's address what are the questions still coming in as we figure out how to use this in practice.
Right. So we get some questions about this even from the CEI line, but also directly from our clinic as well. So a couple of hot topics in terms of questions about how to address STIs that occur on DoxyPep are what treatments to give, or are the tests reliable when you're trying to make a diagnosis? Margie, any updates from that standpoint?
I'm so far sticking with the CDC recommendation that if you're exposed to an STI, but you took DoxyPep, since this was about 2/3 effective, it was 1/3 not effective, I'm just going ahead and treating preemptively for that exposure rather than waiting for the STI to develop. I haven't really changed my position on that without more data about it.
Right. So the alternative approach would be for gonorrhea and chlamydia, for example, if a person is exposed and not having symptoms, to have a shared decision-making process with them for test and treat rather than the empiric treatment if they're not interested in that. Syphilis gets a little more tricky, of course, because it takes quite a while for some folks to seroconvert. And so your initial test right after exposure isn't as reliable there. The question on treating STIs that occur, it's still recommended that you treat per the CDC STI treatment guidelines. So for example, if you do diagnose someone with chlamydia and they're taking DoxyPep, you're still going to give that week of doxycycline as their chlamydia treatment.
I think we've had a couple questions about people who are taking doxycycline for acne and how do you handle that? That's generally a 100 milligram dose daily. And I think all of the guidelines follow the recommendation for DoxyPep to never exceed 200 milligrams in a 24-hour period. So how would you advise someone if they're already on doxycycline as acne medication?
Right. It's an interesting situation. Depending on the dose that they're taking, DoxyPep might just not be a great option for them because they would exceed the recommended daily dose. Alternatively, if the timing of their dose is such that it does occur within 24 hours after their sexual encounter, they could add an extra 100 milligrams to that to make up the 200 milligrams after sex. So it would involve a little bit of juggling and keeping tabs on dosing to make sure you don't exceed that recommended daily dose.
In order to limit the exposure of antibiotic to the patient taking DoxyPep, since the recommendations are that you can take it up to 72 hours, should you just choose to take it 72 hours after rather than 24 hours to cover subsequent possible sexual encounters? So as a antibiotic resistance management approach.
We don't know the answer to that. That's one of the questions about the DPEP Kenya study is whether or not taking it within 72 hours was maybe not as great for those folks as taking it within 24 hours. So at least for now, I would stick to how the studies approached it and ideally take it within 24 hours. And then maybe you are taking a few days of doses, but it seems like sticking to the study for now, the evidence that we know seems like the best approach.
I've also been asked if patients who are prescribed DoxyPep and get a prescription that has 60 pills, if they can use the DoxyPep and can they share that with their partners?
Yeah, interesting question. And we've seen that folks also have reported sharing their HIV PrEP medications as well. I think it's important to ensure that for folks taking DoxyPep, that they are getting quarterly STI testing because we know it's not 100% effective. And so for now, it doesn't seem like that's the greatest option for all parties involved. And probably each person really needs their own healthcare provider engaging them in that quarterly testing and ongoing maintenance of DoxyPep.
Yeah, and some education about the side effects potential, especially if you're going on vacation, maybe to a sunny island, and you would hate for someone to get a serious adverse effect because they never had that counseling discussion when the DoxyPep was dispensed.
Nothing like a sunburn to ruin your vacation, for sure. That does bring up a nice segue into another topic that has been broached in the Seattle and New York City guidelines for DoxyPep, where they talk about counseling patients about considering DoxyPep during periods of time when they might have an increased risk for acquiring an STI, for example, going on a vacation or something like that, where they're going to have more sexual encounters or new partners and things like that. So that's another thing that folks can consider and implement into their DoxyPep prescribing practices.
That reminds me of the phrase that was used when HIV PrEP came out of seasons of PrEP. Of you might need PrEP at certain points in your life, but not at other points.
Right.
And a similar mindset here.
Yeah, I think the same principles apply here as well.
It's been fairly remarkable how quickly the uptake of this has been. Now we have 4 clinical trials and 3 that are published, but only really very, very recently. And we have a plethora of guidelines and policies that are publicly available on the web, most published by departments of health, either city or state. And as I mentioned earlier, we're awaiting the CDC guidelines. So really a pretty rapid implementation, even before the complete formal publication of the data. and a pretty robust pipeline where we're going to get more information. I, for one, am hoping for more information so we feel a little more sure of what's the best way to implement, to provide the greatest benefit to the greatest number of people, hopefully to provide some benefit for those who have really the most complications from STIs, which are those who are cisgender women, and hopefully to give us the least ill effect, specifically concerned about antimicrobial resistance. We really hope we can implement this in a way that we don't promote any significant resistance.
That's a great point, Margie. I think we have a few studies ongoing that will hope to answer some of these questions, including DoxyPEP and PrEP studies in Canada, combo PEP study going on in the US that looks at HIV PEP and DoxyPEP, and also really waiting on the publication of DoxyVac, which also will give us some information about meningitis or meningococcal B vaccination to potentially prevent gonorrhea, waiting for more information on that. And then, of course, the CDC DoxyPEP guidelines. Considering all the evidence that's come out since our last podcast and now, we haven't really seen anything that leads us to change our existing New York State DoxyPEP guidelines, which are recommending DoxyPEP for cisgender men and transgender women with male partners who've had a bacterial STI in the last year and are at ongoing risk for STI acquisition. And also to consider DoxyPEP on a case-by-case basis for cisgender men with partners assigned female at birth and a history of bacterial STIs in the last year, potentially offering some secondary or indirect benefit to those female partners.
I think that's a good place to end. We're going to be talking about DoxyPEP for probably a few years as these subsequent trials play out. Hopefully, it really is a tremendously successful intervention that can help us curb the STI epidemics. So with that, we'll leave you and join us for the next episode of Conversations with CEI. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time for a new episode of Conversations with CEI. Visit us at ceitraining.org and follow us on CEI social media platforms.